Aníbal Sánchez shuts down the Cardinals, and the Nats take game one. Two to preview as well. Let's go. What's going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in and hanging out with us today on Talking Baseball. We're talking baseball, Aníbal Sánchez and the Nats. We're talking baseball. Jake's 30 years old and he's full of Nats. How you doing, Jake? Morning.
James, good morning. I'm doing well. I still have a little of the devil sauce flowing through my system. Had a lot of grape sodas last night, including a haunted, it's like a haunted drink tour thing. I don't know. They were talking about, you actually would have liked it. There was some history stuff. They were talking about what old buildings used to be and the ghost stuff. I mean, there was a couple reaches. There was a couple like, yeah, let me see that freaking ghost. But I'm doing all right. I will say this, and it should be a precursor to all the listeners. I'm so locked in on the Yanks. When you said two games to preview, I was like, what the hell's the other game? So I just, that's kind of where I'm mentally at a little bit. So I don't want any of our NL/Nat/Cards fans to be too offended. But Poppy's pretty locked in on what's going on this afternoon.
Yeah, it's hard. It's hard to calm down the nerves and try to talk about it a little more rationally, which we will in the second half of the show. Oh, glasses. Got his glasses on.
And now I'm a giant NL guy. Glasses are on. I'm locked in on the NL. Don't care about the AL. The DH is whack.
You do look like an NL guy with those glasses on.
Huge NL guy when the glasses are on.
Yeah. Wow. Just nerdy and into like strategies.
Hey.
I'm just joking.
Whoa.
I do like the NL. The NL has provided a lot better baseball this postseason than the AL.
We don't nerd shame on this podcast.
I went to a ghost tour in New York with my girlfriend who loves ghost tours, and it was more of just a history tour, but like,
right,
history you would never share. They're like, in this building, 70 people died of a fire.
Right.
It was terrible. Now there's all these safety rules because of it. People were jumping to their deaths. And I'm like, holy shit, I don't want to. Like, I'm interested, but like not interested.
Right.
And then every story ended with, and now they say it's haunted. I'm like, what? This isn't a ghost tour. You're just telling me history. And then at the end, you just say, and now people say it's haunted.
Yeah, you can't just throw that on the end to any bad thing that's happened. Yeah, there's one of those. I'm trying to think.
Dude,
it used to be a brothel. The woman left the East Coast. She had like postpartum depression, but they didn't know what that was at the time. So she just like fled. She became a whore, and then like one of her husband's friends came back from the East Coast, and she like struggled every day. She like wondered how her family was, and so one of her husband's friends came through the brothel and was like, oh, yeah, they're happy. He remarried. They're raising the kids. Everything's well. And they're like, oh, and then the whore went upstairs and shot herself. And it's like, what? Shouldn't she be happy for the kids? I don't know. There's a lot of moving parts, but had some grape sodas. Caught a decent amount of the games. And I'll be honest with you, as a lifelong Cardinals fan, I'm glad I didn't watch all of the game.
Yeah. Well, you're a big Aníbal Sánchez fan as well.
I love Aníbal, dude.
I know. So this was a good one for you. You had almost had a no-hitter.
Does this officially make the Nats the team of destiny?
Wow. Wow. It's
when Aníbal Sánchez is throwing 7.2 one-hitters.
I didn't watch First Take this morning, nor any morning in the last decade, but I think that's probably on their bottom line.
Yeah.
Does this confirm Nats are team of destiny?
Yeah.
And then they argue about it. What a stupid show. All right.
And man, when did the Daniel Hudson news come out? Because I didn't find out that he wasn't going to be there until like an hour before the game?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure. I watched with no sound.
That was a big whoa moment because we were kind of, we talked about it yesterday, and I was surprised because I didn't think you were going to fully be on this page, but you said it yesterday was kind of a must win for the Nats, and then you hear about the Daniel Hudson news, and you're like, okay, so they've got one guy they believe in coming out of their bullpen. They have Anibal Sanchez starting game one of the NLCS, and now look where we are. I don't know. It's I think it's bad times to be a Cardinals fan for sure.
Yeah, the Hudson stuff's interesting. Some like ex-Marlins execs slammed him. And
really?
What?
Literally?
Not literally. Unreal that Daniel Hudson is on paternity list and missing game one of the NLCS. Only excuse would be a problem with the birth or health of baby or mother. If all is well, he needs to get to St. Louis. Inexcusable. Will it matter? Yo, I can understand. Like, fuck that guy. Fuck that guy. You're only allowed to miss this if there's a serious problem with the birth of your child. Go fuck yourself, David P. Sampson. Yeah. I understand that, you know, you can't naturally think like, man, that's a tough decision.
Yeah.
I think a lot of players would play and a lot of wives and mothers would be supportive of that. Like, no. Your team needs you.
Yeah.
But Dave Martinez said, it's always family first. I understand the timing didn't work out like we thought. Baby wasn't ready to come out. So we get him back when we get him back. And hey, if you work for a company that values that, you probably work better. So hopefully Daniel Hudson comes back, starts tossing gems for his newborn. Congrats on the kid.
Yeah, he has to, right? We did this earlier in the season. When was the dad bowl? I'm forgetting what happened. Was that early in the Yankee season?
The dad bowl? It was... Yeah. Fuck, who was it?
We had two guys that just had kids.
Hap versus David Price. They just both got... They both came off paternity leave and faced each other. It was the battle of the dads.
The dad bowl. Price got rocked, so his kid's cursed, and we're sorry, but... I mean, you... That's more real than the ghost tour I did yesterday. And yeah, no, I mean, Daniel Hudson and the Nats handled it well. I think it's going to be one of these things. I mean, think about, 20 years ago, I think Daniel Hudson would be, you mentioned first take, Daniel Hudson would be getting scolded by guys. This is a once in a lifetime thing, blah, blah, blah. 20 years later, we're sitting here like, yeah, dude, go see the birth of your kid because it's just fucking sports. And I think even 20 years from now, it's not even going to be a discussion. It's like, yes, you had to do that. And everyone ends up looking great about it. I mean, it would have sucked if the Nats had to go to their bullpen. They didn't have enough guys and they blow the game.
Okay, so because Anibal led them to victory, they didn't need to use the bullpen, really. He covered his job, right? Like, he covered for him, basically.
Yeah.
Does the baby's middle name need to be Anibal?
I mean, I think every baby's that was born yesterday's middle name should be Anibal.
That's a good call.
I mean, what are we doing as a society?
Dude, society probably used to be like that. Like, back when fucking King Henry III got crowned, if you had a baby on that day, I guarantee like 80% of the people were like, well, his name's Henry. My dad's name is Chris because he was born on Christopher Columbus Day. Nine months of preparation saying his name's going to be Daniel. And then, born on this day. Oh, let's name him Chris now. Late change for my dad.
That's living life, man. That's how I got my middle name. I was born on my uncle's birthday. People love that stuff. So, yeah, welcome to the world, Anibal Hudson.
Yeah, wow. Okay, you got a burn?
I do.
All right. Let's burn this game, then we can get into talking about it a little more in depth. If we have an ad, it'll go right now.
Nice.
Anyone that doesn't know, before we do this, the ads choose you. It's very weird how we have them done.
Yeah.
And sorry if you hate them, but like, I didn't get one last episode. My dad got two. And they're very much tailored to what he likes. So, creepy world we live in. But we're happy to be getting.
What were the ads for your dad?
Like wine and cheese.
Sure.
And then Hewlett Packard. My dad works in the mailing industry. Yeah, it's fucking wild, right?
It's a weird world.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. On your mark, get set, burn.
Game one of the NLCS in the loo. As the Cardinals and Miles Teller Michaelis try not to get whiplash versus Anibal the Animal Sanchez and the Washington Nationals top two, Howie Mandel Kendrick has a deal with the devil versus Michaelis. Jan Ryan Gomes says he's not a Mecca four, but he's not bad. Both those guys doubled their pleasure to get the Nats on the board 1-0. The story? I don't care if they're juiced or not. Give me the Anibal. He has people calling the Cardinals the Baja Men because they are one-hit wonders. There's Lucifer's friend again, Howie, with the RBI single. Doolittle does a little for the save. Nats swipe game one, 2-0 attitudes.
I mean, unprovoked shot at the Baja Men.
Well, here's the situation I found myself in. If you have one hit as a team, in a burn, I'm going to have to call you guys a one-hit wonder.
Mm-hmm.
And so I looked up a list of one-hit wonders, and Baja Men is the only band that's like multiples that makes the most sense. So right now, the St. Louis Cardinals are the Baja Men.
Okay, I get it now.
And my hands are tied on that.
I would have went Lou Bega.
Ooh, Lou Bega has a ton of hits.
I know. We did this on our radio show once, and then we played some of his recent songs. They weren't bad.
Just get his name out your mouth.
Okay. So the Baja Men. Yeah, man. You know what? I was watching this game. I was carving pumpkins. I had the game on the laptop. I'm figuring out how to watch every single baseball game but still be active in my life. So we're carving pumpkins, carved a hell of a pumpkin, accidentally carved it upside down. Didn't matter. I was able
What was your game plan with the pumpkin?
I'm really bad at carving pumpkins, so we've carved before. So I usually just go very basic jack-o'-lantern, which you can't fuck up. If you make a very basic jack-o'-lantern, people are going to be like, they're not going to hate it. They're going to be like, yeah,
right.
There it is. I did like a big mouth with stitches. It's on my Instagram story. It's pretty good. It came out pretty good, but I did upside down. So anyway, my point is, I'm watching the game, but I'm just doing activities and hanging out with my girlfriend and her friend as we do it, you know? And then I move to the couch, and I'm making GIFs and videos the entire time, so I still feel like I'm covering the game. I did not know he had a no-hitter until, like, the sixth inning. I didn't have the sound on, and that's just not something you count, you know? And like when they cut to commercials, I just didn't notice the hits. So when that came into my head, I was like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Wish I could unhigh myself because I may need to make some videos and shit.
this would get real special real quick.
Yeah. But that's wild.
He walks Wong.
Yeah. And then he hits someone else.
In the fourth. And yeah, I know, Jim, one of your, so Arizarena, pinch hit for Michaelis in the six hits him. That's just smart.
Welcome to the game. You're not going to fuck this up. Goodbye.
Yeah. If you think you're getting this and then Yachty gets hit later. But yeah, man, I mean, it's unbelievable. And then Martinez, it's the eighth inning. It's the eighth inning. Martinez comes in and pitch hits for Helsley, and then that's the first hit. They take him out. Doolittle gets Fowler, which is a huge at bat because that's the classic case of
unraveling.
You go from no hitter perfect game, and then you could go to losing the game instantly.
Well, that's why it's good. It's a playoff game. If this was a regular season game and it's 2-0, you might let Anibal fuck around and try to finish the game, you know, just to instill some confidence and pride and, hey, this is his game right now. And usually when that gets popped, you know, the no-hitter gets ruined, then it just floods out. And you're like, because so much pressure gets relieved, and now just a different mindset on the mound. And usually you see that implode. But because it's the playoffs, because it's a 2-0 game and so important, it's like no questions asked. Like everyone in the stadium knew he was going to be done as soon as he gave up a hit. There was way they were going to leave him in. So it's actually beneficial. Yeah.
If Dave Roberts was managing the Nats, we're talking about how Anibal Sanchez lost this game.
Sorry, Dodgers fans.
Sorry, Dodgers fans.
But you get it. You totally get it.
You know.
Yeah. Dude, Anibal was crazy. And then, like, the game was pretty good. I think the biggest thing for me was Soto shuffle versus Michaelis. Michaelis was good as well, dude. His curveball is crazy.
He's fun. I mean, he's totally, because I mean, he went overseas for a little bit and came back, but it's a pretty cool time to be a pitcher with arm talent because you can go into a lab or wherever you want to go, pick up some revolutions if you really care and you want to work at it, and then you could go to a team and say, hey, by the way, my curveball spins as much as Kershaw's now. So if you're interested in that, let me know.
Yeah, just call me up. Hey, yeah. How about our dude Howie Kendrick starting the scoring off with a double versus Michaelis? He's now 8-for-9 this season versus Michaelis.
It's unreal, and I think it's almost unexplainable how there's some guys that just, because you think of baseball and you think like, oh, it's a sport of skill, there's some luck involved, but it's so funny that these guys are so talented that if there's a pitcher with a pitch mix and an arm slot that fits your hitting style, you own them. And I mean, vice versa for some pitchers, but I think that's almost more common.
Yeah.
But 8-for-9.
Well, it's 8-for-12 now. There was 2 at-bats later in the game that he grounded out, so I fucked that up. But at one time, it was 8-for-9. And he did score the winning run, the first run, because he led off with a double.
Yeah.
I will say this. Michaelis has a very distinct way the ball comes out of his hand. It looks like he's throwing it with a pins and needles hand almost. Like, it doesn't look like, it just looks kind of loose. But, so maybe Kendrick, there's something. He clearly picks the ball up pretty well.
Sees the ball well. And yeah, Jim, I think one of the other stories of this game is, and it's tough to know this in the second inning, and this where NL baseball comes into the play, is if you can have the batter lead off an inning in the NL, that's huge, because you're basically go to the top of the order with one out, and now you can get through a team's toughest hitters with like a leg up.
Say that again. You said if you can have a batter lead off the inning?
So the pitcher lead off the inning. So in the second, Kendrick doubles, Zimmerman grounds out, Taylor strikes out. So you have 2 outs and you're at the 8th spot in the order, which is Yan Gomes with Anibal Sanchez on deck. So the kind of age-old NL debate is, okay, do you pitch around Gomes and get Sanchez? But in these playoffs, we've seen it's been pretty impactful. If you can get that 8-hitter out and lead off with the pitcher, now the pitcher's basically a free out, and you go to the top of the order with the team's best hitters and a free out on the board. Instead, they give Gomes something he can handle. He doubles, scores Kendrick, and like you said, technically that's the game-winning run. You don't know that in the second, but that's a brutal feeling when the pitcher is on deck. If you're a Cardinals fan, you're definitely looking at that in hindsight with
Yeah. Well, the next run and the only other run scored in this game was in the 7th inning. What was it? Adam Eaton tripled. Pitching change. Howie Kendrick singled. So Howie Kendrick drove in the second run and scored the first run. Howie Kendrick was a big part of the offense. Good for him coming off that. Another point in this game I wanted to touch on was that catch by Zimmerman at first in the 8th. Did you see that, Jake? Almost wish he got the no-hitter just so we can have, like, and remember that catch conversations. Because it was, Zimmerman shouldn't be doing that. It was amazing.
Zim, he's I know you, we did a little mockumentary of it, but Team of Destiny, Ryan Zimmerman's playoffs. Holy shit, man.
Crazy. What do you got on the – do you have anything else on that?
Well, I was not on Zimmerman, but I know something that you're a big fan of. And, you know, sometimes I like to give you some love, man.
Okay. What are we talking about?
Is that a problem?
We'll see.
It's the talk of the podcast. Jim, I think there was, and I'll double check right now, but I think the Cardinals went down, and obviously when there's a one hitter, these numbers look like that, but I think the Cardinals had 7 innings where they went down 1, 2, 3.
Oh, yeah.
6 or 7.
7.
And I know that's something you're a big fan of, and it's just,
well, it's just,
you know, we've been on this big, like, a walk is a rally in the playoffs, because if you have a guy on base, and that can turn into a 2-run homer real quick. I mean, there is just nothing. And it's for Anibal Sanchez, I mean, obviously a special night for him, but as the Cardinals, I mean, that's it's unacceptable. You're waking up in St. Louis, it's a bad morning.
Yeah, I mean, I like counting 1, 2, 3 innings because it all sounds so obvious, but that's the goal of the pitcher and the defense, obviously. But just like the Aaron Boone for the Yankees, and I'm sure a lot of other teams use this term, just traffic. You just want traffic.
Yeah.
Like if you're the Cardinals fans, would you rather 7, 1, 2, 3 innings, or would you rather leave 8 guys in scoring position? A lot of people would say, I'd rather the 1, 2, 3 innings because leaving people in scoring position sucks. It's not true, because if you have 8 guys in scoring position, you're going to score at least 1 or 2, and you're going to make them use more pitchers, and you're going to make them use their pitch count. You want guys on base, even if the result isn't a run, the actions of getting guys on base helps. A 1, 2, 3 inning does literally nothing for your cause. And so for the Nationals to have 7 of them, that's kind of how the game went. And then we had the Soto shuffle. Did you see this, or were you getting spooked at the haunted house?
I was getting spooked, but I love a good Soto shuffle.
Well, he does it all the time. He does it a lot.
Yeah.
And he did it extra aggressive during a bases loaded 2-out at bat. Extra aggressive. And Cardinals fans were in my mentions saying, like, he does this all – or Nationals fans saying, he does this all the time. There's nothing different. And I was like, I've seen the Soto shuffle. I'm a big fan of it. This was a little extra. He was staring at Michaelis, licking his lips, literally licking his chops, just staring at him. And he would wait. So I'm going to do a little breakdown, I think. He would wait till Michaelis would lift, like, look up until he stopped staring. Like, he wanted Michaelis to know he was staring at him. And then he did.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the whole point.
I love the Soto shuffle. I think it's like, if there was another species that did, like, planet Earth on humans, I think the Soto shuffle would be its own episode, because it's like, watch as the hitter tries to intimidate the pitcher as he throws a ball up in the zone, and Soto licks his lips and he stares at him. Yes.
It's very much his own version of a mini haka.
Yes.
Go to my Twitter and watch this one at bat. Do you have your phone? Because it is extra than his usual Soto shuffle. And there was one pitch, Jake, that he did the whole, like, Soto shuffle, started grabbing his nuts, and then the ump calls it a strike, so he has to stop halfway through because he can't do it on a strike. It's only on balls. And then he grounds out, and Michaelis grabs his junk right back in his face, looks at him down the first baseline, grabs his junk. That's fun. I think it's fair play by everyone there. If you try to do that to intimidate the pitcher, or get in his head, or let your presence be felt, the pitcher's allowed to do it back to you. I think it's all in good fun.
Yeah, I'm team everything. I'm team. I think Soto's turned it up a little notch the playoffs. I think this is kind of still in that realm. And yeah, if you're Michaelis, I mean, send it. Let's have an alpha off.
You see him licking his lips and staring at him?
Oh yeah.
That's
Soto bait. He's found himself. I mean,
even the like pointed toe and the bat like wag in the middle of the strike zone. Like, come on, pitch to me. It's.
I think it's very much that, you know, Soto's had the two most important hits in this Nationals playoff run. He's obviously had 2 special seasons now. I think confidence is an interesting thing. I was listening to a Barry Zito interview the other day, and that had a lot of wild left turns about confidence and what you're thinking on the baseball field. But in sports, it kind of doesn't matter until it happens on the big stage. And now Soto, I mean, he's like unlocked the final. He beat the final boss, basically. He's had the two essentially game-winning hits in two rounds of the playoffs, and he's a monster. He has no fear, and he's gonna lick at you. He's gonna shuffle. He's gonna show you his meat a little bit. Soto season.
Yeah, the very next at bat, he did not do it as much. He was facing Andrew Miller. It wasn't bases loaded, two outs. So it's all in fun as a third party. Get it, if you are a Nationals fan or a Cardinals fan, get a little emotionally fired up. Sure, that's allowed, but third party, it's
fun
all
around. He turns it up for the situation, which I like.
Yes, it was very, very funny. I want to do a side-by-side of him and Judge, because I don't know if non-Yankees fans don't know this. Judge doesn't move his feet at all. He steps into the box, and he stays there until he's either hit a ball, walked, or struck out. He just literally stands still. And I think that's cocky in its own right, because it's like, I'm ready. Come on. Bring it. You know? Like, whenever a pitcher takes long, Judge just standing there waiting. It'd be cool to do a side-by-side. How, this is the most you could do. This is the least. All right. Let's get into the second half of the show. All right. Got two games to preview, Jake. I know you only thought there's one, because there's really only one that matters in our hearts. And I'm sorry about that, but we are Yankees fans, and this means a lot. And if you have a team in the postseason, you understand how much it consumes you. Well, the first game is not the Yankees, Jake. The first game is the two teams we just talked about. The Nationals versus the Cardinals. And the Cardinals have a tough, tough thing losing game one. Tough. Because now you got three dudes. I think the Nationals are the favorite. If you lose this game, you're going on the road to face Strasburg, who's been the best pitcher for the Nationals, and then Corbin. I don't know how, but you got to beat Scherzer today. They have Wainwright on the mound. He's been really good this postseason. You got any thoughts on this matchup?
Yeah, I don't know. I am feeling good. I came off yesterday saying that it just feels like the Nats are all around better, and you know, you wonder if St. Louis is going to rally. I have good news for St. Louis. That, Jim, there's some pretty good parallels to from this series to the last series. If they can beat Scherzer today, I think they take back all the momentum. Where Scherzer, you know, he's Max Scherzer, he's a trump card. His playoff numbers aren't full Max Scherzer, and a lot of guys aren't, so that's not shots fired at him. But, you know, you can get a couple off Scherzer, whether it's first inning or if you just run into one. And I think right now there is so much momentum for the Nationals. They're sitting there saying, we stole game one. Hudson was out. I'm not sure if he's going to be back tonight. I think so, but I don't know. If you can get to Scherzer, it's we did it. We took him down. We're not scared. And I think St. Louis was pretty prepared to leave this home set 1-1. But you can't go down 2-0.
No, and I'm rooting for the Cardinals tonight, because a 1-1 series with Strasburg versus Flaherty in game three is everything we could ask for as a third-party fan from this series.
And, man, it kind of sucks talking about it, to be honest, and welcome to podcast life, because Yeah, I mean, I could see the Cardinals going down 2-0, and then I'd be saying the same stuff. Like, if Flaherty shoves and tosses Strasburg to the side, like, it becomes a road off. Did I say the road game was going to win the first three games of this series yesterday? How drunk am I?
Yeah, you said the roads.
Okay, so yeah, I'm gonna support that because I believe in my past sins. And yeah, sure, but it's gonna be fun. We are falling for old man Wainwright giving everything he has. It's gonna be fun to see Wainwright back against the wall. They need something special today, and there's kind of no reason to not believe Wainwright's gonna be good.
Yeah, I'm trying to look up Wainwright stats. I have Scherzer versus the Cardinals. Are you interested in that?
I mean, a little bit.
What if I told you Tommy Edman lights Scherzer up?
Tommy Edman, yeah. I had a couple Cardinal fans DM me after yesterday's Talking Baseball, and they're like, hey, you didn't even mention Tommy Edman and Wong. Those guys have been doing big stuff in our lineup. And I was like, yeah.
Well,
show me in the CS.
Tommy Edman. Oh, the 10-run first. None of those at-bats count for the Cardinals.
Right. That's just a collapse.
They don't know my rule against that.
Right.
If you score 10 runs in the first inning, if you score 5 runs in the first inning, everything's impressive. If you score 10, that solely falls on the Braves collapsed.
Yeah.
And it's like when you score 20 runs in a game, it's not impressive. First 10 are impressive. Second 10, not impressive at all. Anyway, Tommy Edman is 2-for-3 off Scherzer, Jake. 2-for-3 with a home run. So that means nothing because Scherzer probably took him very lightly and he jumped him like Sogard jumped Cole. But good for Tommy Edman. He gets to go in there with a little confidence under his belt. Marcell Ozuna has good numbers versus Scherzer in 39 plate appearances. He's got a 917 OPS with 2 home runs.
And maybe we just need to make this a generic thing, because you could say it about literally any playoff game that, because, I mean, jumping on them in the first inning is the best way to score in the playoffs. Is the first inning meter a 10 out of 10 for this game? Like, you just got one hit, you lost game one at home, Max Scherzer's on the mound. Is the first inning scoring meter basically as high as it can be for a team?
For the Cardinals, it is.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yes, for the Cardinals, it is. I'd agree with that.
Because, I mean, if they don't get a hit in the first inning, the stand starts looking around like, okay, we're doing this again. And I think even if you get traffic on the bases and you don't score, that's almost as deflating.
Yeah. You know who's got really bad numbers versus Wainwright?
Bad numbers versus Wainwright, calculating Howie Kendrick.
I'm not positive on his. It is a guy on the Nationals.
Would have been rude if it was a guy in the Cardinals, by the way.
Yeah, it was a guy in the Nationals who in this postseason has a .452 on-base percentage and a .060.
Rendon?
Rendon. Been the star. He is 1-for-16 against Adam Wainwright with no walks. So a .063 on base percentage versus Waino. Doesn't like them curveballs. So watch out for that matchup. That'll be fun because Rendon's hot as a pistol. Can't hit him. And then you got Adam Eaton, who has a .545 OBP versus Waino. He's 6-for-11. And Ryan Zimmerman crushes Wainwright as well. Now, you asked about Howie Kendrick, so I'll let you know.
Howie.
2-for-9 with a walk, so nothing there.
Howie Kendrick, have a postseason.
And Paul Goldschmidt sucks versus Scherzer. 2-for-25. So there you go. That's my battle right now. One of those guys has to get the pitcher they've never really gotten before. Yeah. Rendon has to get Waino or Goldie has to get Scherzer. Who's going to do it? Place your bets.
And it sounds kind of dumb. It sounds like we're almost like we're mocking it a little bit, but that's a huge thing. Like, you come into the playoffs, each of those pitchers is like, oh, I own this guy. If they get one off of you in the playoffs, you're like, are you kidding me? I've dominated this dude, and now here we are, game two of the NLCS, and Rendon slaps one down the line, or Goldie connects with one. That's a momentum.
Momentum. So, all right. I'm rooting for the Cardinals. I want a 1-1 series going into game three, but just give me a special fun storyline.
Whoever's down in the eighth.
Let's move on to the American League Series, and we have Scott Titmus in the chat. Says, is there an NL game today? Didn't realize.
Yeah.
That's how.
Great question, Scott.
There's bias here. Go cry about it. I am amped up, nervous as a Yankees fan for this game one. Zach Greinke going for the Houston Astros versus Masahiro Tanaka for the Yankees. I don't know. I can go into pitching matchups. Do you have any general thoughts about this series? We did a whole preview on talking Yanks. Astros are really fucking good. Yankees have not been this healthy all season, but they are healthy. The Yankees lineup is much better than the Rays lineup, so I expect them to be able to get to pitchers a little better, but those pitchers are still really, really good. I'm not cocky going into this. I was incredibly cocky going into the Twin series. Almost like had to simmer myself down in front of a mirror. Like, don't jinx this. Why are you so cocky? I'm confident that this will be a good series, that it'll be competitive.
Yeah, I and you and I went back and forth on this a little bit. I mean, if in the realm of sports, when you see two teams like this, you normally sit there and say, like, all right, we're going seven. This it might be ugly how we get there. Get your popcorn ready. I don't know. I mean, obviously, we'll see how the series goes. I'm sure there's going to be 20 different takes and turns that come out of it. But I think these are I don't think this is rude. I think these are the two best teams left in the playoffs. They've been two of the best teams all season. And they're absolute juggernauts. I mean, you look at the Yankees lineup. We did this yesterday, and I think we did a little bit of it on Talking Baseball. But I mean, go through that Rays lineup and look at some of the guys. I mean, Travis d'Arnaud was hitting cleanup. For the Yankees, you'll probably see Giancarlo Stanton, former NL MVP, not Travis d'Arnaud that got cut from a team this year. The Yankees lineup has incredible depth. The Houston lineup has incredible depth. Everyone knows about the Houston starters. Lesser known, but, I mean, the Yankees bullpen is really special with some quality starting pitchers. I mean, this matchup, I think a lot of people are saying it's the de facto World Series champion. There's a lot of moving parts there. But this is, I think... And maybe this is AL bias or whatever, but these are the two best teams in baseball meeting up. It seemed like this whole year was building towards it, and now we're here.
Yeah. It's going to be fun. I hope that it delivers. I hope the Yankees beat them 10-0 every game in four, but I'm pretty aware that's not going to happen.
No, and it's like we were saying, and I think, you know, there's some parallels. St. Louis goes down, and now they've got Scherzer and Strasburg lined up with a Flaherty asterisk for Game 3. But the Yankees, and this scares us as Yankee fans, but the Yankees are almost expected to win this game because Verlander and Cole are on deck. So that's a pretty interesting dynamic. You don't see that in a lot of ALCS Game 1s that the home team – It feels like the Yankees really need to get it to a degree. Again, I'm sure this series is gonna have more turns than a roller coaster. That's just the nerves coming out, but it's exciting. You want it to be good baseball. You don't want to walk away from one of these games and be like, oh, that guy booted a ball or one reliever blew it for you. You just don't want that.
Yep. Yeah. Let's see. What are some common thoughts about this series? Everyone has the Astros have the better starting pitching. Yankees have the better bullpen. When you combine those, it levels out more than you want it to in your head if you're anti-Yankees. Like,
yeah,
their bullpen for the sixth and seventh inning is similar to Verlander for the sixth and seventh inning. So just need the starting pitchers for the Yankees. They need the starting pitcher to go two times through. This game, Jake, Zach Greinke is on the mound. He's coming off a brutal start. He would not be their game one starter if they didn't go five games, but he is their game one starter. This is a big game, like you said. There are parallels with the Anibal Sanchez stuff. Not as much. But stats-wise, the Yankees have played Greinke twice this year. I think they beat him once and didn't beat him another time, right?
Trade deadline day.
Yeah, and the first time, and actually this was one of the actual real answers Greinke gave in his press conference. Like, you've seen this team twice already, and he was like, they were so injured when I saw them.
Yeah, that was the best answer he gave.
Yeah.
It's like, that doesn't matter at all. It's a totally different team.
Yeah, the lineups that he saw. Let me read them to you because it'd be funny real quick. Brett Gardner led off. Voit was second. Gary third. Glaber. Talkman, Maben, Estrada, Wade, CeCe. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the nine won't be hitting in today. So there's only three hitters that saw him that game. Yep. And then the second time it was Hicks, Judge, Encarnacion, Didi, Glaber, Gio. It's pretty good. Cameron, Maben, Mike Talkman, Romine. So I think we have five. He saw five of nine that time.
Yeah. So I don't know. I think when you zoom out and you're talking big themes, I think what could become a theme of this series is almost, you know, there's not halftime in baseball, but in theory, there's the first half and the second half of the game. The Astros have the advantage in the first half of the game. The Yankees have the advantage in the second half of the game. I don't know if that sounds dumb to people, but it's true.
Yeah.
So I wonder, it's kind of funny that the Yankees team pitching-wise that gets compared to this is the Royals team that won it all, because they had those four relievers that would come out. And it was awesome. When that Royals team was right, it was five-inning games. And the Yankees kind of have that mentality. It's going to be interesting to see how they try to jump these Astros starters, if they try to make something happen, or if they can get early leads. I mean, they believe in their bullpen, where the Astros are going to be believing in, A, their starters a third time through the order, and their bullpen. It'll be interesting to see. I mean, can the Astros bullpen step up? Will Harris had a really special year, 1.5 ERA in like 60 appearances. Can he be that guy in the playoffs? Ozuna, we saw him have to get pulled because they tried to push him more than an inning. How does he look like? And, I mean, can they give it to those guys in the right opportunity?
Yeah. Tanaka tonight, what Tanaka does is throws a lot of different pitches, and he's really good at throwing strikes not in the middle of the zone, when he's on. When he's on, he's really good at nibbling without really being a nibbler. Like, he can nibble correctly.
And Tanaka's worst playoff start ever is 5 innings pitched, 2 earned runs, and that was his first ever playoff start in 2015. In 35 career playoff innings pitched, he has a 1.54 ERA, 6 starts. I mean, he's been special in the playoffs, and if you're a Yankee fan, you have to believe in him. If you're a Houston fan, I mean, you're talking yourself into your team, obviously, because you got a ton of dudes, and that lineup is a lot to navigate. I'll say this, Jim, and I wouldn't say this on Talking Yanks, but if they got to Tanaka somehow, we'd be shook, because we've never seen that in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't even like talking about it, so.
Yeah, so we won't.
I don't like anything you just said. I feel like you knock it on wood the whole entire time.
I know.
Jose,
we try to be neutral. Oh,
well, who would Tanaka has to watch out for tonight is Bregman. He's got the best numbers versus him, and George Springer. And then Reddick is 3 for 19. That's not good. Greinke, DJ LeMay, you've seen Greinke a ton. 61 plate appearances, .283 batting average. It's all singles, really, but it's a .283 batting average. And if DJ can do that, if he can just slap a single to open up the game, how much of a breath of fresh air that would be? Just like, okay, one base runner, you know, right away. So I'm rooting for that. All right.
And by the way, there's a lot of social warriors that came out yesterday defending Grinke's anxiety. And to a degree, you're right, but it was also Twitter just got the ball rolling on a topic, so everyone felt they had to get their tweet off. Like, yo, let's not make fun of this guy for that. And yeah, you're right. I mean, anxiety is a real thing. What a lot of people were talking about, though, is, I mean, Grinke's last three playoff starts, he's been bad. 12.1 innings pitched, 15 hits, 7 walks, 13 earned runs, 9.67 ERA. In his last three playoff starts, Grinke's been bad. So it'll be interesting to see, with him being kind of the weak link of the Astros' big three, can the Yankees jump him, and can the storyline, if Zach Grinke does get jumped today, I mean, the storyline is going to be that playoff Zach Grinke isn't there.
Yeah. Best case scenario for the Yankees. So best case scenario for the Astros. What Astros fans are rooting for is obviously they take game one. They've got Verlander and Cole games two and three. They're up 3-0 after three, and that's their best case. Yankees fans.
It would be jumping the bullpen too.
Yankees fans.
If they jump the bullpen, that would be threat level midnight in Yankee land.
For Yankees fans, it's different, Jake. We can't even have 3-0 in our sights right now. They have that advantage where their best case is a 3-0 lead after three games. Yankees' best case is a 2-1 lead after three games, if we're being honest. And it's beat Grinke tonight, somehow get to Verlander or Cole at Yankee Stadium. And if the Yanks are up 2-1 after three games, then you have their game four pitcher in game four, and then Grinke game five. That's Yankee fans' fantasy. It's not as good as what Astros fans can dream up. They kind of have the advantage there a little bit.
Yeah, and I mean, Yankee fans are saying to themselves, if they're being real or not, but if you can get Grinke, A, you're gonna see him again, and B, you're going to get a start by either Jose or Keedy or Wade Miley, so the Yankee fans are penciling that in as a win. So if you get two Grinke starts and Urquidy, you need to beat Cole and Verlander once, which those words could end up haunting me in a week and a half.
Yeah.
But the Yankees have a path. Houston has a path. It's I feel like maybe we're talking ourselves down. It's going 7/Yanks in 5.
Question from the chat before we wrap this up from Rich George. Why do you think they are going with Tanaka game one? He's their best pitcher. Throw your best
Most
pitcher.
Reliable.
He's throw your best pitcher the often as possible. Like, you want Tank getting two starts before anyone else. So that's why.
He's their most reliable postseason offense. I think best pitcher could get skewed, especially like if Paxton's right. I think he's their best pitcher, or Severino actually. I think that's probably the question by Rich George. When those other guys are right, they're more talented. But Tanaka's playoff body of work is unquestioned.
Yes, you're exactly correct. I just would have never. Who's your best pitcher for this series? Tanaka's the best pitcher in the series.
We could look back and Severino. Severino's a guy that could throw six innings with 12 Ks. Like, Tanaka doesn't have that.
Yeah. But we can't trust Severino, and that's into the package right now.
Right. As of now, Tanaka has the most reliable, best body of work.
Tanaka's good isn't as good as the other two, but correct. Tanaka's good comes out more reliable, so he's the best pitcher right now.
It has been out, yes.
I factor that into who's the best pitcher. If you're just going straight skill, it's not Tanaka, but the Yankees clearly know Tanaka's their most reliable option.
Yes.
All right, that ends this one. Thank you guys very much. It's going to be, tomorrow might be a later episode, Jake. We have to do Talking Yanks tonight, then I have to do an airport run at 3 a.m., and then we'll do this whenever I wake up from that tomorrow.
The moment you wake up, I guess, before you put on your makeup?
Yeah, say a little prayer for me. Forever and ever. See you guys. Enjoy the games tonight. If you're not a Yankees or an Astros fan, tune in. Should be fun.